Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Good evening. We begin tonight, keeping them honest, with a simple and, you would think, obvious point. What you see at one moment doesn't necessarily reflect the reality of another or of the whole. Footage of soldiers during a pause in battle doesn't mean there's no war. The Zapruder film before JFK is shot doesn't make it a parade. Pretending otherwise is conning people. Pretending otherwise when you know better is something else. And enabling that con when you're a high-ranking elected official accountable to the public and directly in the line of succession to the presidency is hard to imagine. Or so you might think, because that's just what House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has done. He enabled this.
The crowd was enormous. A small percentage of them were hooligans. They committed vandalism. You've seen their pictures again and again. But the overwhelming majority weren't. They were peaceful. They were orderly and meek. These were not insurrectionists. They were sightseers.
Fox's Tucker Carlson last night cherry-picking from some 40,000 hours of footage that Speaker McCarthy released to him and only him of the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Now, the Fox host attempted to con his viewers into thinking it was something it was not, not mentioning that 140 members of law enforcement were assaulted that day, according to the Justice Department, that some were pepper sprayed, tasered, maimed, blinded, or died in the immediate wake of it, as Officer Brian Sicknick did, which Carlson says, without evidence, was unrelated, even though the medical examiner concluded it was. Nor did Carlson focus on the fact that the mob nearly broke into the House chamber where members and staffers were barricaded, or that rioters shouting "Hang Mike Pence" came within just a few dozen feet in a couple of seconds of actually finding him, or that then-Minority Leader McCarthy was so rattled by rioters breaking into his offices, he called the former president, demanding he call off the mob, only to be told in so many words to pound sand. This reality is what Tucker Carlson downplayed last night by suggesting that the existence of less violent-looking video meant the violence was no big deal. In short, conning people. Here's what some Republican senators who were there say about Carlson's portrayal of what they actually experienced firsthand.
I think it's bullshit. I was here. I was down there. And I saw maybe a few tourists, a few people who got caught up in things. But when you see police barricades breached, when you see police officers assaulted, all of that.
I thought it was an insurrection at that time. I still think it was an insurrection today.
I don't know how you want to describe it, but it was an attack on the Capitol.
As for whether Speaker McCarthy made a mistake in giving Carlson the video, Republicans by and large avoided saying so directly today. Utah Senator Mitt Romney, though, who called Carlson's portrayal of January 6th, quote, dangerous and disgusting, did say Speaker McCarthy made a mistake. Carlson, by the way, said this about vetting the video.
We do take security seriously. So before airing any of this video, we checked first with the Capitol Police.
Multiple sources on the Hill say otherwise, that Carlson's show provided only a single clip to review, not all of them. And in a letter to the department, the chief of Capitol Police writes, quote, the opinion program never reached out to the department to provide accurate context. Contrast that and our reporting with Speaker McCarthy's assurance just a week ago.
We work with the Capitol Police as well, so we'll make sure security is taken care of. We are consulting with the Capitol Police.
Now, if that happened, the Capitol Police chief isn't saying so. He's apparently livid at the handling of this. As for Speaker Kevin McCarthy, he spoke tonight to reporters, including CNN's Manu Raju. He said he has no regrets about his decision to give Carlson the footage, arguing he did it in the name of transparency, which is similar to his justification last week when he said, I think sunshine lets everybody make their own judgment. That's what he said then. But this was really never about sunshine. It was about appealing to the former president and his most extreme supporters in Congress, the ones who helped him become speaker. And if that meant sowing doubts about the bravery of Capitol Police and D.C. police that day and downplaying an attempt to overthrow a democratic and fair election, so be it. Kevin McCarthy was scared on January 6th, and with good reason. The sad thing is how scared he still appears to be today, not just of the former president, his supporters who roamed the Capitol halls that day, but of some of the members in his own party, the ones he serves with and is so beholden to today. Joining us now is CNN law enforcement analyst Michael Fanone, who was tasered several times in the neck, beaten, and suffered a heart attack as a result of his effort defending the Capitol as a member of the D.C. Metro Police Department. I appreciate you being with us. Last night, Carlson called people who breached the Capitol, quote, sightseers instead of insurrectionists. You were there. What do you make of what Carlson has done?
Yeah, I mean, I heard the language that Tucker Carlson used to describe the individuals that were there. It's certainly not what I would have used to describe Albuquerque Head, the individual who pled guilty to placing me in a chokehold, ripping me off of a police line and pulling me out into a crowd of violent insurrectionists while he yelled, "I've got one."
His name was Albuquerque Head.
Albuquerque Head. It's not the language I would use to describe Kyle Young, who violently assaulted me, lunged for my firearm, who was also pled guilty to the assault. It's not the language that I would use to describe Thomas Sibick, who recently pled guilty to stripping my badge and my radio from my chest and then burying my badge in his backyard back in Buffalo, New York. And it's certainly not the language I would use to describe Daniel Rodriguez, who admittedly struck me in the neck numerous times with a taser device, all while I was out in the crowd, defenseless and being assaulted from every direction. So, you know, what Tucker Carlson forgot to talk about, like you said earlier, is the 140 officers like myself that were severely injured as a result of this violent insurrection and attack on our Capitol.
You know, I mean, the idea of Tucker Carlson being in that mob that day and not wetting his pants is hard to imagine. I mean, I find it hard to understand somebody who has never put himself in harm's way in any capacity for anyone else or on reporting a story and yet has the audacity to try to rewrite history. I mean, that's what this is. It is an attempt to rewrite history on what is one of the most consequential, you know, certainly one of the biggest events in American democracy and the biggest threats to American democracy.
I agree. I mean, Tucker Carlson is, you know, by his own admission, an entertainer, not a journalist. And on top of that, he's just proven himself to be Donald Trump's chief propagandist. And that's all this was. And I think that, you know, most Americans recognize that way before this segment aired, that this was propaganda and it was an attempt by Tucker Carlson to downplay and whitewash the events of January 6th.
On Speaker McCarthy, you, in your book, you write about a meeting that you had with him as well as with the family of Officer Sicknick. Talk a little bit about what you saw in that meeting. And so based on what you saw in that meeting, I assume you're not surprised that the Speaker gave Carlson exclusive access to this material.
Absolutely. I mean, the one takeaway that I had from my meeting with Kevin McCarthy was that he said clearly that he could not control the fringe members of his party, which is strange because he's now seemingly aligned himself with the fringe members of his party. He knew ahead of time exactly what Tucker Carlson was going to do with this footage, and yet he gave him the exclusive access to the footage, 40,000 hours of which there is no chain of command to discern, you know, what type of security protocols may have been revealed to whom at what time, which, you know, in and of itself is outrageous. And that being said, you know, this was all an attempt to appeal to or appease Donald Trump, who Kevin McCarthy has become a useful idiot for.
Michael Fanone, I appreciate you being with us tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.
We want to turn now to breaking news. Another batch of documents in Dominion Voting System's lawsuit against Fox News. More communications from inside the company. Senior media reporter Oliver Darcy joins us now with that. So what's new in this filing?
There are a lot of messages in this filing. This filing basically contains all the exhibits that Dominion has been using to make their case against Fox News in the previous filings that we've seen. And so we're basically just getting raw text messages, raw emails, deposition transcripts that again continue to show that behind the scenes, Fox News knew exactly what they were doing. They knew these election lies that they were pushing were nonsense, but they allowed these election lies to gain a foothold on their air. I want to read to you an email that Rupert Murdoch sent Fox News CEO Suzanne Scott on January 21st, 2021. He concedes in here, he says, he's talking about election lies, and he says, maybe Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham went too far. And he goes on to say, oh, very well for Sean Hannity to tell you he was in despair about Trump, but what did he tell his viewers? And in another exchange in his deposition, Rupert Murdoch was asked repeatedly about election lies that were about Dominion, and he rejected them over and over and over and over again. I'll read part of it. He said, they said, do you believe that Dominion was engaged in a massive and coordinated effort to steal the 2020 presidential election? No, Murdoch replied. Have you ever seen any credible evidence to suggest that Dominion was engaged in a massive and coordinated effort to steal the 2020 election? No, Murdoch replied. Have you believed that Dominion was engaged in a massive and coordinated effort to steal the 2020 election? No. You've never believed that Dominion was involved in an effort to delegitimize and destroy votes for Donald Trump, correct? He says, I'm open to persuasion, but no, I've never seen it. Hmm.
Dominion seeking a summary judgment. What would that mean, and what's Fox's response been?
Yeah, Dominion wants the judge basically to rule on this. Fox's response has been obviously against this motion. And so we're going to see what happens later this month when the judge does rule on this. I think most legal experts would say that this is likely headed toward a trial. So we'll see what happens. But Fox is responding tonight. They're basically saying this proves that this whole proof that Dominion has been engaged in smearing it. They say that these raw transcripts prove their claim that they have been cherry picking information out of them and making it in their filing. So,
Oliver, I want to bring in veteran First Amendment lawyer Lee Levine, who has in his long career represented both Fox and CNN and many other media outlets in America. So, Lee, in a previous appearance on CNN, you said a similar filing was helpful, but quote, not a smoking gun. What would a smoking gun look like when the standard is actual malice?
Well, when I said that last time, Anderson, I was talking about the testimony that Murdoch gave when he said that various of the hosts on Fox had endorsed election fraud. And I said that was not a smoking gun because it did not relate directly to Dominion. It just talk generally about election fraud. But what Oliver just read, I think, is a little bit closer to a smoking gun. Here we've got Murdoch saying that he, who had at least theoretical authority to stop Powell and Giuliani from appearing on Fox's shows, in fact, never believed and has never seen any evidence of election fraud by Dominion. And that's pretty close to a smoking gun.
So I just want to put those what Rupert Murdoch said on the screen and just read them out again, because it's, as you said, this is important. A Dominion lawyer said, do you believe that Dominion was engaged in a massive and coordinated effort to steal the 2020 presidential election? Rupert Murdoch said no. Next question was, have you ever seen any credible evidence to suggest that Dominion was engaged in a massive and coordinated effort to steal the 2020 presidential election? No. And then the third question was, have you ever believed that Dominion was engaged in a massive and coordinated effort to steal the 2020 presidential election? Again, no. And the fourth question, you've never believed that Dominion was involved in an effort to delegitimize and destroy votes for Donald Trump, correct? I'm open to persuasion, but no, I've never seen it. So, Lee, why does that matter?
Because the standard that Dominion has taken it upon itself to meet is that those persons at Fox responsible for broadcasting the information about Dominion that has, in many instances, been acknowledged now by Fox to be false, at the time either knew it was false or believed it was probably false. Mm. And at the top of the food chain, of course, is Rupert Murdoch. And Dominion has made an effort to show that Rupert Murdoch was hands-on. That is, that he was aware of what people were saying on his air, that he had the ability to stop these guests from appearing and repeating these things that he apparently testified he's never believed to be true. And if Dominion can convince a jury that Murdoch, in fact, was responsible for those broadcasts, that testimony would satisfy the standard of actual malice, knowledge of falsity, or reckless disregard of the truth.
And Oliver, I mean, is there any doubt that Murdoch had the power at Fox News to call into the control room and say, get Rupert, get Giuliani off?
There's no doubt. And he's even testified that he did have that power. He just didn't exercise it. But at the end of the day, over at Fox News, make no mistake, whoever CEO, it doesn't matter. Rupert Murdoch is the one that calls the shots.
And also the on-air personalities at Fox seem very, like Tucker Carlson was talking to other anchors about the stock price of, I guess it's of Fox. I don't know what the stock price of the parent company of CNN is. I don't know what, like, it's fascinating to me that that was in their mind. That was like a talking point amongst them. Like, oh, we can't do this. The stock price is being hurt.
And this was because the stock price was falling because viewers were rebelling against Fox News. They were turning off Fox News. They were
right,
going
because
to
Fox
Newsmax.
Had told the truth about the exactly. results in Arizona.
The viewers clearly did not want to hear the truth. They wanted to believe this fantasy that had been sold to them by Donald Trump and by people on Fox News at times. And so they were turning off the channel. They wanted to go to Newsmax. Trump was attacking the network. It was the height of the wake of the 2020 election. And, you know, you see in these emails where they talk, like you said, about the stock price, about viewers rebelling, about this is a very serious situation. Everything that Fox has been built on can be destroyed very quickly. Trump is a destroyer, Tucker Carlson said, but he's not going to destroy us. I mean, these emails really shed a lot of light on what was happening.
Lee, based on what you've seen, I mean, is there any part of Dominion's suit where you think they've overreached?
No.
Wow.
I think they, if anything, in the complaint, which makes sense because they didn't have access to all of these materials then, they undersold what they will ultimately be able to prove now that they've had discovery and have gotten access to all these text messages and emails, and they've had the ability to take depositions of all
I mean, that's
these
kind of
people.
Amazing, isn't it? I mean, don't a lot of attorneys usually oversell something initially?
Well, they work off of what they know and what they have, but yes, sometimes. But these are, I've said this before, there are very good lawyers on both sides of this case, and neither side is going to oversell anything. They're very good, and they know what they're doing. Mm.
Lee Levine, Oliver Dorsey, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Next, an update on the four Americans taken at gunpoint in Mexico. The news, very bittersweet. Later, with COVID and the origins of it, back on page one, a conversation with a recently retired Dr. Anthony Fauci. When we left you last night, four Americans were missing in Mexico, some possibly wounded or worse after being fired on and abducted by drug cartel gunmen. Tonight, they're no longer missing. Two are safe, but two have been killed. We're now from CNN's Rosa Flores.
Two of four missing Americans are back in the United States and receiving medical treatment in Texas after being kidnapped in Mexico, after what a U.S. official tells CNN was a case of mistaken identity. Two members of the party were found dead, and one of the survivors is severely injured with a bullet wound to his leg, according to U.S. and Mexican officials.
In the party of four, Latavia Washington McGee and Eric Williams survived. Zindel Brown and Shaeed Woodard were killed.
We're providing all appropriate assistance to them and their families. We extend our deepest condolences to the family and loved ones of the deceased.
They crossed the border from Brownsville, Texas, into Matamoros, Mexico on Friday for McGee to obtain a medical procedure, according to a friend of McGee's. They drove a white minivan with North Carolina plates across the border and got lost while trying to locate the medical clinic where they were headed, the friend told CNN. Before they were able to locate the clinic, disturbing video shows the aftermath of the kidnapping as heavily armed men loaded them into a white truck and transported them to various locations to evade capture, according to Mexican officials.
Se va a buscar a los responsables.
The Mexican president says those responsible will be found and punished. A U.S. official familiar with the investigation told CNN they believe a Mexican cartel kidnapped the group after mistaking them for Haitian drug smugglers. The State Department has issued its highest level 4 warning, do not travel to Tamaulipas state, where the group was abducted due to heavy crime and kidnapping in the region.
There are many people who cross over that border for these medical appointments.
Attacks on U.S. citizens are unacceptable, no matter where or under what circumstances they occur.
McGee and Williams are now under the care of the FBI, and U.S. officials are making arrangements to bring home the bodies of Brown and Woodard.
We want to see accountability for the violence that has been inflicted on these Americans.
Rosa joins me now just across the border from where this all happened. Has anyone been arrested in connection with the kidnapping?
You know, Anderson, according to Mexican officials, one individual has been arrested, a 24-year-old from Tamaulipas, Mexico. Now, according to Mexican officials, this man was somehow associated with doing surveillance on the Americans. But here's the thing. Mexican officials are not disclosing if this individual is connected to criminal organizations or the cartels, or even if this individual had anything to do with the assaults, the kidnapping, and also the killing of the Americans. What Mexican officials are saying is that they received a tip early this morning. They followed that tip. They found the Americans in a wooden house outside of the city. What they didn't find, Anderson, according to them, were the people who were responsible for the kidnapping and the killings.
Rosa Flores, I appreciate it. Thank you. Coming up, a congressional hearing begins tomorrow that will probe the lab leak theory of the COVID pandemic, which has found new support from the Department of Energy and the FBI. Dr. Anthony Fauci joins us next for an exclusive interview to discuss whether he will ever get complete answers to this question. Almost 3 years after the World Health Organization declared COVID a pandemic, House Republicans will hold their first hearing into its origins tomorrow, more than a week after the Department of Energy reopened that debate in a newly updated classified report. Sources tell CNN the agency now believes the pandemic escaped from a lab in Wuhan, China. FBI Director Christopher Wray said publicly last week the FBI also believes the pandemic was likely the result of a lab incident in Wuhan. Other agencies aren't so sure. Our next guest was the scientific voice of the previous administration, joined now by Dr. Anthony Fauci, formerly the nation's top infectious disease expert. Dr. Fauci, it's good to see you. Are the FBI and Energy Department right about the lab leak?
Well, it's very tough to tell that, Anderson, because they're talking about information that they have that we don't have privy to, so we don't really know. They have made opinions on low confidence from the Department of Energy and moderate confidence, I believe, from the FBI. So I don't think there's a really correct and verifiable answer to your question. It's just still remains unknown at this particular point. There are two theories, as we're all familiar with now. One is a lab leak theory. The other is that it was a natural occurrence from an animal spillover. The one thing is that we have to keep an open mind about this until there's definitive evidence.
How important is it to figure it out?
Well, it is, Anderson, because you want to make sure that whichever of those alternatives it is, that we do whatever we can to prevent it from happening in the future, because we have had outbreaks before. I mean, we had SARS-CoV-1, which was clearly shown to go from a bat to a civet cat to a human. And if there's a possibility, which there is, certainly, we haven't ruled it out, of there being lab leak, there are things that you can do to prevent the recurrence of these things. For example, the data showing that it might be a natural occurrence would make you want to be very careful about the animal-human interface and make sure that we have strict regulation of bringing animals into wet markets. If it turns out to be a lab leak, you want to be very much more stringent in the controls of the experiments that you allow to be done. So it is relevant to understand. Whether or not we ever will know, Anderson, I'm not sure, but it certainly is important to know.
This has obviously become very partisan. As we mentioned, House Republicans are holding a COVID hearing tomorrow. You're obviously someone they have been focused on. Would you testify if they asked you?
Of course. Oh, without a doubt. If they ask me, I definitely will testify.
You've had experience with antagonism from certain lawmakers over the past couple of years, specifically with Republican Senator Rand Paul. I just want to play something for our viewers to give them a sense of what the back and forth has been.
For years, Dr. Ralph Barrick, a virologist in the U.S., has been collaborating with Dr. Shi Zhengli of the Wuhan Virology Institute, sharing his discoveries about how to create superviruses. This gain-of-function research has been funded by the NIH. Dr. Fauci, do you still support funding of the NIH funding of the lab in Wuhan?
Senator Paul, with all due respect, you are entirely and completely incorrect that the NIH has not ever and does not now fund gain-of-function research in the Wuhan Institute
of Virology. Do they fund Dr. Barrick? Do you wish to retract your statement of May 11th where you claimed that the NIH never funded gain-of-function research in Wuhan?
Senator Paul, I have never lied before the Congress, and I do not retract that statement. Okay. And if anybody is lying here, Senator, it is you.
Senator Paul, just today on Fox News, accused you of orchestrating a cover-up. Do you have any reason to think the new Congress is going to be any less contentious? Or do you think they're actually interested in seeking the truth?
Well, I don't know, Anderson. I don't really want to comment on that. I mean, the most important thing we've got to do is stick with data, stick with science, be transparent and be honest, which I have been very much so, literally, for the entire 50 years that I've been at the NIH and the 38 years that I directed the Institute. So that was an unfortunate interchange with Senator Paul, but that was Senator Paul being Senator Paul.
Are we ready for the next pandemic? I mean, a lot of folks, Bill Gates has famously warned about the next one coming. He had a plan said you could invest tens of billions of dollars, I think, in order to try to prevent these pandemics. Are we ready for something else?
You know, the answer is we're partially ready. There are some things that have gone right with the pandemic preparedness and response for COVID-19, and some things that need to be substantially improved upon, Anderson. The thing that went right was the investment over decades in the basic and clinical biomedical research that allowed us to make a vaccine in unprecedented time of less than a year that turned out to be safe and highly effective, and according to the Commonwealth Fund, has saved over 3 million lives and prevented 18 million hospitalizations and saved us about $1 trillion. Where we need to do better is in the public health preparedness. We need to have greater coordination, greater transparency, greater availability of data, and to be able to analyze and get data in real time. So you're asking me, are we prepared? The answer is, in some respects, we are, but we certainly can do better. And hopefully, the lessons that we learned from this terribly tragic experience that we've been through would put us in better stead for the next inevitable outbreak, Anderson. It may not occur in the next year or 10 years or 15 years, but there will be another pandemic, as history has taught us.
Yeah. Dr. Anthony Fauci, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Good to be with you, Anderson. Thank you for having me.
Coming up ahead of a new CNN Town Hall I'm hosting on the fentanyl crisis that starts at 9 o'clock, just less than 30 minutes from now. We're going to take you to Philadelphia to examine why this deadly drug is now being mixed with a veterinary sedative. It's a graphic and disturbing report, but important to understand the full scope of the fentanyl crisis in America. Minutes from now, I'm going to host a new town hall on the deadly fentanyl crisis in this country. Lawmakers, medical professionals, family members will answer your questions, and those in the grip of this drug will join us with their stories. Because even as America fights this plague and makes seizures as it did more than a week ago of millions of pills, fentanyl is still finding its way into homes and onto our streets. And as our Ellie Reeve discovered in Philadelphia, fentanyl is being cut with a new substance in some places to make its effects last longer, but that also leaves users with open wounds that can last for months and even rotting flesh. We warn you, what you're about to see contains graphic imagery and may be disturbing, but we think it's important to show to understand the scope of this crisis.
This train says bad. I didn't know I did this. I was like one of the first victims out here with this kind of shit.
The opioid crisis has been going on for a long time. But in Philly, the problem has shifted. Most of the street fentanyl supply is cut with an animal tranquilizer called xylazine, or Trank.
To be honest, I really didn't notice the change. It was just heroin wasn't doing anything for me anymore. You build a tolerance for everything eventually. And then I started doing Trank, and heroin just disappeared altogether. And they made it cheaper, easier to get. Now it's just killing everybody.
Does Trank give you the same feeling that fentanyl would?
No. You get warm and fuzzy from fentanyl. Trank puts you to sleep.
Trank was found in over 90% of the dope samples tested in Philadelphia, and it's spreading to other cities on the East Coast. In 2021, it was detected in 34% of overdose deaths in Philadelphia. Users did not want xylazine, but now they're addicted to it.
Okay, so someone told me you're a real OG out here. What does that mean?
Original gangster, okay. I've been out here for a long time. A lot of people know me out here.
So, you've been here when,
Trank started being in the supply, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I've seen the whole transition go from real heroin to Trank and Fetty. And it really changed a lot of people's habits, lifestyles.
Xylazine is a powerful sedative not approved for use in humans. It can cause users to be motionless for hours, even days.
It knocked the elephants out with it.
Yeah.
So that's why you see everybody on, you know?
It also causes skin wounds that won't heal and that can become necrotic. Doctors don't yet know why.
It removes 7 pounds of flesh and a liter and a half of pus. It's been open for 21 months. That's how horrible this Trank shit is. It doesn't let your body heal.
It's killing us. Slow but sure it's killing us. Some of us earlier than others, but it's eventually going to kill you if you keep going. And I see it every day. Death. Every day. Right next to you.
In Kensington, the main avenue runs under the elevated train, and on many of the corners, you can buy drugs. On the side streets and in the park, people without homes live and sleep and use illegal drugs.
Hey, what's up, Pop? Did you want to get on the list?
A Percocet prescription led to Sarah Laurel getting addicted to heroin and living on the street. When she got sober, she created Savage Sisters, a harm reduction organization that offers showers and nurses to treat people's wounds.
Shower, wound care, both, or just shower?
Everybody knows about Kensington. It's a tourist location for drugs.
A couple people mentioned that people will come down here for the weekend and never leave.
You just get stuck. Why go home?
This is McPherson Square Park, but we call it Needle Park.
Why?
Everybody shoots up here. There's a lot of syringes left around.
One day in 2019, a friend drove James Sherman to Kensington to buy fentanyl, and he never came back to the car. He spent 2 years homeless, 18 months of them in this park.
When I got to Kensington, this was like a Disneyland for drug addicts.
Why?
Open air.
People without homes in Kensington still have their own community with its own economy.
Well, I had two hustles. I don't know if one is necessarily appropriate to talk about on camera, but it's like hitting people, you know, people that are injecting. If they're not good at themselves, they need, you know, what we call a hitter. And then my second one is what we call a runner. Somebody comes down from the county and they want to know where the good stuff is. You know, some people would say, hey, I want a bag of Coke, but like, I don't want bath salts.
Yeah.
Or, you know, somebody would say, hey, I want Trank, but I want a little bit of fentanyl. And I would just know that from being down here. So I say, hey, I'll take it, but you know, you're going to have to look out for me.
Wow, kind of like a tourist guide.
Yes, 100% like a tourist guide, a middleman of copping drugs for sure.
So now what's the differentiator if Trank's and everything?
Oh, I don't, probably just which ones are heavier with the Trank and which ones are least Tranky.
The nurses at Savage Sisters use their experience with addiction to care for people who come in.
I used to love using my veins. I had great veins there. Because maybe you have a little bit of cellulite.
Have people come in here where you're like, dude, you gotta go to the hospital?
All the time. It's really hard. It's scary. You know, you're going to the hospital. Like, are you gonna manage my withdrawal? Are you gonna manage my pain? Are you gonna treat me like someone who uses drugs and stigmatize me and turn me back out?
This has made it really difficult for patients to get into recovery. You know, they're so fearful of the withdrawal. They're fearful that the doctors and nurses don't know what xylazine is.
Xylazine withdrawal lasts longer than opioid withdrawal, and it can cause intense anxiety. Doctors don't know the best way to treat it, and they're trying different drugs to see what works. But D'Orazio warns that cracking down on Trank will just push dealers to introduce other, more dangerous drugs. He says what will help is making it easier for users to get health care.
But how do you do that? How do you make the access to care better?
Better medication, so better ability to manage withdrawal, creating more housing access. Housing is a major issue in our community, and I think that's something that we're not concentrating on is the prevention of this disorder.
And what would that be? More mental health care?
Yes, absolutely.
The same reason that mom on the main line reaches for a martini glass at noon is the same reason that I reached for a rig and put a needle in my neck. I was in pain. That's it. I was hurting. The people that are out here numbing their pain with substances, whether it's heroin, alcohol, cocaine, we need to address the pain. We need to stop isolating the substance and look beyond it.
And then you, I'm gonna give you Narcan.
Okay.
You know, I'm a 5'1" purple haired recovering heroin addict. I don't have credentials. I don't have a degree, and I had to come up with ways to convince people that we're worth saving.
Ellie Reeve joins us now. I mean, what did you learn about the backgrounds of the people that you spoke to?
Most of them aren't from Kensington. They come from all over. People from the suburbs, people who had wealthy families. There are several people who had children, even teenagers. Mm. One woman I spoke to had been diagnosed with cancer at 40, and she got addicted to pain pills, and now she's living in a shelter.
It's so stunning to see up close. Ellie Reeve, thank you. Appreciate it, Ellie. Again, our hour-long scene on Town Hall, America Addicted, the Fentanyl Crisis, begins just a few minutes from now. But first, one-on-one with NFL player KJ Osborne, who's been called a hero tonight for helping rescue a driver from a burning car with three others. He shares the details next. Right place, right time. That's what Minnesota Vikings wide receiver KJ Osborne is saying about helping rescue a man from a burning car with his Uber car driver and two other Good Samaritans on Sunday night in Austin, Texas. According to reports, the car crashed under a bridge and then burst into flames. And thanks to the quick action of Osborne and the others, and the driver is expected to be okay. Joining us with more on the rescue mission is KJ Osborne. Thanks so much for being with us. This is really amazing. Can you just walk us through what happened when your Uber driver spotted the burning car?
Right. Oh, man, it was crazy. First of all, you know, I appreciate you for having me on, man. You know, it was a crazy situation. My Uber driver, you know, I have my head down. I'm in the back of the Uber. And initially, you know, he starts making a lot of noise. And I'm asking, you know, what's going on? I look on the street. And there's nobody there. And then, you know, I look off to my right. And there's a car, like you said, under a bridge. You know, it had crashed and it's, you know, in flames. And my Uber driver, whose name is Abdul, you know, we stopped and, you know, we said we got to call 911. And, you know, initially, you know, we both ran to the car and there was another a group that stopped. And her name is Rita and Arthur, and they both stopped. And we all, you know, seen this car up in flames. And, you know, the driver, we seen that he was alive. It was initially my Uber driver that had went out. And, you know, Abdul went down, opened up the passenger door. And, you know, he's seeing this guy who's in the vehicle. He's seen that he was still alive. And the driver was able to muster enough strength to kind of move his body weight over to the passenger seat. And that's when we all went down. We helped pull him out the car, but we were still close to the car because the whole time, you know, this car, we had no idea if it was going to blow up. Obviously, that would have been the worst. So, you know, I picked the guy up and, you know, we walked him, you know, 10, 15 yards away from the car. By then, you know, the firefighters that came and the police and everything. And, you know, we were able to rescue him. But wow. Like you said, right place, right time. You know, I think, you know, like I said in my tweet, you know, God is real. And, you know, I'm happy we was able to do it.
Had you ever, I mean, seen anything like this before, done anything like this before?
Right. Of course, I've never seen anything like this before in person. You know, I joked about it in another interview. I'm currently getting my master's in criminal justice at the University of Miami. So I have an internship left to finish. So it wasn't for football. I always wanted to be in the FBI or Secret Service.
Okay.
So, you know, I walk up to this burning car, you know, I'm like, all right, you know, this is live bullets. And, you know, so I, of course, I've never seen anything like that. But to be able to act on it again with the other three heroes that I was with was definitely a good deed and something that, of course, I've never imagined myself being a part of in a million years.
Yeah. I mean, it's awesome that, you know, four people randomly happened to all be in the same place at the same time and have the same, you know, drive to get involved and try to help and do something. It's kind of just, right. It's an extraordinary story. Do you know how the person is doing or how serious the person's injuries were?
We do not yet. We've been waiting for a police report. The police got all of our contact info and I've been in contact with Arthur, Rita and Abdul. Waiting to hear back, you know, what's going on. Initially, when we pulled him out the car, his mouth was bleeding because when I picked him up, he had like a lot of blood on my shirt. And I heard initially that he had an ankle. I don't know if it was broken or whatever, but all his limbs seemed to be intact. He was speaking and things like that. So we're still waiting for a police report. I have the help of, like, you know, my marketing teams and things like that. We're trying to reach out to the police to so I can get in contact with this guy and we can, you know, get a chance to shake hands or do something.
I love that you're going to have this bond with these three other people for the, you know, for the rest of your life. It's this incredible. Right. I love this photo that you tweeted out of all of you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's something important, and it happened obviously so fast. And that night, I asked them to take a photo because Arthur and Rita. I know Arthur. He had came from Cameroon. He's been here. I've been speaking to these people the last couple of days. He came from Cameroon 3 years ago. Man, he's a big soccer fan, so he doesn't know much about the NFL. And Abdul, I don't think he watches much NFL football either. So they had no clue that. Uh-huh. I was an NFL player or anything like that, because that wasn't important. You know, we were, you know, trying to save a man's life and do a good deed. So football was not even in the question.
Yeah.
But I told him, I'm like, you know, this is going to be a story. You know, people are going to talk about this. And of course, they're going to say, you know, KJ Osborne, the NFL football player and things like that. But I'm like, you know, this was all of us. You know, this was me. This was Abdul. This was Rita. This was Arthur. And, you know, I wanted to make sure, you know, they got, you know, love as well. And I have something planned for them as well to you know, show my appreciation for them, because I know, you know, it's a little different, obviously, because I'm a football player.
Yeah. Well, I love that you're, you know, that it's something you all did together and that you're celebrating them in that. KJ Osborne, thank you so much.
Of course, man. I appreciate you having me again, man. Thank you.
The CNN Town Hall, America Addicted, the Fentanyl Crisis is next right after a quick break.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.